Hey, it's Marketplace Tech for Thursday, September 24th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today at the United Nations in New York, the General Assembly debate begins. Member states will surely be talking about human rights, maybe even surveillance. Well, as it happens, the digital rights advocacy organization Access just put out its annual list of the tech industry's heroes and villains. So we called up Amy Stepanovich. She's U.S. Policy Director for Access. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Color me slightly surprised. I feel like a lot of people in the tech industry, you know, think of Apple CEO Tim Cook as, you know, second violin still to the great Steve Jobs, but he's on your list of heroes.
He's really been vocal about standing up to requests from the U.S. and from all over the world to really undermine user security, and he has flat out said that he will not do it. It has been a really huge relief to see a company that has so many users really take a strong stand in favor of user security.
All right, but let's get to the good stuff. Villains. You have, of course, British Prime Minister David Cameron on this list, and I'm thinking of his wanting messaging apps to build in backdoors, things like that.
Yeah, they also have published a paper about when government can hack into user systems. The fact that they don't really recognize how far-reaching some of the implications can be. One individual hack could have repercussions for a lot of people, hundreds of millions of users.
So among the, like, all the principles that your group pushes for, you had kind of a supreme hero and a supreme villain, one who did the most good and the one who did the most harm. Who are sort of the epic foes opposed to each other here?
Sure. So as our overall hero, we looked at David Kaye, who is the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Free Expression. And then as a villain, we named Hacking Team. And I think this was a really easy choice for us. Hacking Team has generally been outed by researchers as selling communication surveillance to really awful governments to allow them to spy on their users. It's kind of horrifying to think about.
Amy Stepanovich at Access, I'm going to make a prediction. Now former CEO Martin Winterkorn might be on next year's list for the emissions software scandal at Volkswagen. The heroes list? No, the other one. All right, you ready to get a little new agey? I know the New York subway system feels cavernous, but I don't think that's the only reason I'm seeing crystals all over the place on my commute these days. Turns out I'm not the only one seeing a trend. Jenna Wortham of the New York Times Magazine is on this too. Hey, Jenna, thanks for talking.
Ben, thanks for having me.
All right, techno-mysticism. Can you define this for me?
There was this very strong interest in posting images of crystals and talking about moon phases and lunar cycles and horoscopes and aura photography. And there was all of a sudden this fascination with those who seem to be very technically savvy with these things that date back to medieval times.
Is it the crazy optimism in the tech world is also maybe connected to some interesting ideas about crystals and auras or what? What are we talking about?
Right. Yeah. Well, my first theory was just that there was an aesthetic, you know, pleasure into these images, and geodesic designs and psychedelic patterns all look really, really good when you share them socially, and crystals are beautiful. And then I spoke with a couple different folks who study this stuff a little bit more closely than I do. One was sort of, yes, there's this resounding optimism that's infusing the entire technology world, but also we're closer to magic than ever through technology. I mean, we own all these devices that can do things at the push of a button that feel so incredibly easy and seamless, and, you know, that they're just these kind of slabs of metal and glass, but they can do so much, and that's kind of a weird modern wizardry. And so maybe we're much closer to this idea of getting back to thinking about things as working very magically, if that makes sense.
Did you find any interesting e-commerce that was happening around both of these things, like people selling crystals that were supposed to make your device work better or something?
Yeah, there was a really interesting article in SF Weekly a few weeks ago that looked at tech firms and startups who were consulting psychics in different mediums for advice on when to launch their apps, you know, or there's this idea that when the planets are in a certain alignment, electronic devices don't work as well. So they were kind of looking towards that for guidance on to when, you know, as to when to put their products out into the world. Or there was even one case of a woman being brought in to exercise, I guess, malfunctioning hardware and debug servers. And so this is all part of a spectrum, and maybe that's a bit extreme, but it does sort of show that there is this willingness to believe in a different kind of belief system and in a different way of thinking about how we interact with technology and our devices.
Jenna Wortham, she writes about technology and culture for the New York Times Magazine. Jenna, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
And turns out 5 times as many sets of fingerprints were stolen in that Office of Personnel Management hack a few months ago as originally thought. New number, 5.6 million. In a future where our technology may be unlocked more and more with biometric security systems, that's a problem. You can't change your fingerprint. Cyber firm RSA's Senior Director of Technology, Kayvon Alakhani, says that means a future of multi-factor authentication.
Ultimately, it's never good news when people think about, well, I only have 10 fingers. Now, how can I uniquely identify myself? So it's definitely not good news from that perspective. But if you think of it in the context of multi-factor auth, and you say, well, somebody has to still prove that they are me before they can use this data, and this was not the sole way of identifying me, then it's not as drastic.
Maybe in the future we'll have a solution to fingerprint hacks so we won't have to remember our PIN, our password, and our grandmother's first dog's name. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.